Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Mystery to Me podcast. I'm Anya Kane.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee.
And we love movies and television shows with a whiff of mystery. Mystery to Me will feature us riffing on murder mysteries, film noir, cozy detective stories, police procedurals, psychological thrillers, legal dramas, tales of teen sleuths, and more.
Once we're done yucking it up about whatever we've just seen, we'll serve up our 5-star final takes on whether it's worth your time.
If you're offended by silliness, profanity, political asides, canine-related interruptions, and losers laughing at their own bad jokes, beware. Also note that some of the stories we'll be talking about are pretty dark, and in some cases exceptionally badly written. So content warning for murder, violence, suicide, torture, rape, racism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, and bigotry.
If there's a movie or show you'd like for us to talk about, email us at mysterytomepodcast@gmail.com. Our show's take on genre is pretty loosey-goosey. So as long as your suggestion has some dash of mystery, we're interested in hearing about it.
Spoiler alert, we're going to be discussing the entirety of this show or movie, spoilers and all. So if you want to be surprised, press pause, go watch the thing, then join us for the show. Now that you've heard our spiel, go ahead and polish off those magnifying glasses and slip into your favorite trench coat. Let's get mysterious.
So, Anya, what did we watch?
Well, Kevin, we watched the fifth episode of the first season of the Hardy Boys / Nancy Drew Mysteries, a.k.a. The Disappearing Floor, which first aired March 6, 1977.
That was over 2 months before the premiere of Star Wars, a film which had great special effects that revolutionized the industry.
So, I think you're pointing that out for...
No reason.
It's not like there's a lot of really dumb green screen work in this one.
And the special effects in Star Wars were done on a relatively low budget. It's really amazing what you can do on a low budget if you're creative and know what you're doing.
If you're creative, you put in hard work, time, thought, care, give a shit.
There's no limit to what you can do.
But anyways, we digress.
Because obviously that has nothing to do with this particular program.
No. Jesus. Guys, this episode is a fucking trip. And it starts off as a good trip. And then it kind of like, you kind of get a little nervous. And then it's suddenly a really bad trip.
I can't tell if you're laughing or weeping.
Who knows? Who's to say? Maybe I'm just a hologram. Maybe we all are.
You see, you're getting ahead of yourself, though. You're giving some spoilers.
Oh, I don't want to spoil this masterpiece. So, okay. So this show starring...
Oh, so first of all,
No, starring Parker Stevenson and Sean Cassidy as the Hardy Brothers.
The Hardy Brothers?
Hardy
Brothers. It's a well-known the Hardy Brothers mysteries.
Hardy Bros. What were you going to say?
I was going to say I don't understand the premise of the show. Mm. There are two relatively young men living with their father and their housekeeper. I'm not clear.
No. Housekeeper?
Their aunt lives with them as a housekeeper, right?
I don't think she's a housekeeper. I think she's just the aunt. You think women have to work in the household to earn their keep? She just lives with them. She's in the initial books, which came out in the 30s and 40s, she's basically the spinster aunt who lives with them. But in this, she's just an aunt who lives with them.
Doesn't matter. So what are they in high school? Are they in college? What are they doing? Do they have jobs?
The series, it seems ambiguous, but I guess we could kind of speculate based on the original source material and based on context clues. So I believe both actors were in their 20s when this was made. Is that?
Okay.
That's what I think. I mean, I don't know.
You're the Sean Cassidy expert.
I'm not a Sean Cassidy expert. What the fuck? You're the one who went to a Sean Cassidy concert.
What's your point? You weren't even born yet. What was I supposed to do? You blaming me for not bringing you?
Yeah, you just went and thinking I would want to go even though I didn't exist yet. What a trippy argument. So they kind of seemed like you could make an argument. You can make a couple arguments. Well, in this series, they seem to never go to school. So that would indicate that they're both out of school. They have no school to go to because...
And they don't... And they don't seem to have any jobs. They seem to have lots of free time.
So one thing that you sort of overlook with this is that, you know, a lot of people have their kids work for them after they graduate high school. They don't go to college. They just go into the auto business. They go into the mechanic business. They go into the family bakery. So that very well could be is what happened here, where they both graduated from high school and were like, Dad, we want to be investigators too. So he's like, okay, you guys could be working at the Hardy firm or whatever the hell. He's, you know, he has his own private eye business.
But what you're overlooking is the fact that in other episodes that we've seen, but we haven't inflicted on people yet, they're just out cruising around, not doing anything involving their dad. Like we have a friend who goes to college where a bunch of kids go missing. Let's just drive over and say, how do you do?
What you maybe fail to conceive of here is that throughout the series, they seem to be getting acclaim for what they do. They're basically mystery influencers. You know, before that was a thing in the 70s, and people, they have a reputation that precedes them. So maybe they make so much money from this that they just kind of get to dick around a bit.
What I think you're neglecting to take into account is there's never any indication that they receive any monetary awards for solving a case. They just do it out of the goodness of their hearts.
Kevin, they don't show them shitting either or like, you know, banging chicks. But just because you don't see it in the episode doesn't mean it can't happen.
I think at the end of this episode, Sean Cassidy bangs a chick. It's discreetly off screen. Yeah. He does it when her dad's in the house. He's like, why don't you come downstairs?
Granddad.
Her granddad's in the house. And he says, hey, why don't you come downstairs and look at my lab? And she says, oh, sure. There's nothing I'd love more than to see a crude lab set up by an amateur in his dad's basement. And they go downstairs, and then Parker Stevenson looks at a girl sitting next to him. I'm glad that old Sean Cassidy's getting a chance to share his interests with somebody. And they smile knowingly at each other. He's down there having sex with this girl while the granddad's up there having tea with his father.
Well, you see them successfully complete case after case in areas where the dad is getting paid. So you can assume that money exchanges hands. Perhaps you don't see that happening because it's not particularly interesting.
If they're making so much money by solving all these big cases, why don't they strike out on their own instead of just hanging out with dad all the time?
Maybe they enjoy working for their father. You're not going to work for your dad? Old man Greenlee?
I don't see you working for old man Kane.
That's because he's a doctor and I would kill people. I can't go and tag along and be like, all right, I'll inject this one. I'll put him down cold. I would become a serial killer.
I'm seeing something similar is happening here. He's an investigator. He says, oh, why don't you follow this very dangerous man? Just see what happens. And they're like little kids. They're like little boys.
You don't know how
that's not unprofessional. That's very unprofessional.
If they're teenagers, then this is incredibly unprofessional. If they're in their early 20s, it's still somewhat unprofessional. But if they're like doing a family business thing, I can excuse it. If they're teenagers, I think certain labor laws and call CPS essentially, because he's putting these kids in danger. So it all depends on the age, and they don't make it clear. They make it ambiguous because they don't think they even want to deal with that.
Let me ask you this hypothetical situation. You have a mystery you want solved. Don't think you can do it yourself. You decide to hire a renowned private detective. You hire him. You pay him a professional fee to do the job. And then you find out he just sloughs it off to his two know-nothing sons who were just sticking around the house all day. So they're like sitting in the house playing chess. And he comes in and says, hey, I want you to do this case for me. He says, yeah, okay.
I mean, in fairness, Kevin, they solve every mystery that comes in their path in the show. So saying they're know-nothing kids seems a little bit dismissive and reductive. But I will say, if I didn't know anything about them, their reputation didn't precede them, I would probably be pretty unimpressed.
You say they have such a great reputation. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But there's a couple of moments in this episode where they see something that other people don't believe. And they say, oh, you're just stupid kids.
Well, this is episode 5, in fairness. They're just starting out. Here's the thing. Here's what I'm thinking. If your dad was a famous detective and he had this cool job, you got to solve all these mysteries, and you being, you know, Kevin, a smart gentleman, you are.
I am being Kevin.
Yeah, you, what a smart thing to say.
Well, being Kevin, that's what you'd expect.
I am being Kevin, yes, okay. And maybe you looked up to your dad and you also wanted to feel smart and be a detective and do all these cool adventures and show how smart you were. Wouldn't you be kind of pissed off if your dad was like, fuck off, you'll never work for me. Get the fuck out of here. Wouldn't you be a little, wouldn't that be kind of, he has all these cool adventures and he won't even clue you in on it or include you at all. Wouldn't you feel a bit resentful?
It would teach me something about the confidentiality between a detective and his clients. If I hire a detective, I don't want him to go around, go home, and say, guess what happened to the office today, boys? Oh, Kevin Greenlee came in. Look, you never guess what crazy problem he's having with his wife.
Do you want to enlighten me on what crazy problem Kevin Greenlee is having with his wife? Do you want to elucidate?
See, and then the thing is, your dad... Your dad is a successful physician,
yes,
and you respect him, but you're going to make your mark in another field.
Well, even if I wanted to be a doctor, you know, and I've been decent at science and math, which I very much was not, you know, I don't think the business doesn't work the way anymore where you can just be like, all right, come to the hospital with me. I'll get you set up. Like, you have to, like, there's a formalized process that sort of, you know, it doesn't completely kill out nepotism like that, but like I would have to apply for a residency at his, you know, it's not as simple as just show up for work and we'll get you started.
Well, shouldn't Mr. Hardy have some sort of, you know, boys, I'd like you to be successful private investigators, love for you to work for me, Hardy and Sons, maybe go get some training, maybe I'd go to a police academy. Know what you're doing. Don't just go out and trail dangerous people because I tell you to.
Yeah, that's a fair criticism. You could go to college, study forensic science, study the latest techniques by working in law enforcement, do a stint at the FBI, then come back with that knowledge. No, I mean, that's a fair criticism.
Thank you.
And I think that's something they're going to need if they're going to figure out what the problem that Kevin Greenlee is having with his wife.
You're going to need really experienced detectives, really experienced therapists. A whole squad.
Mr. Police, you could have saved her. Ani gave you all the clues. I'm leaving snowman-esque messages all over the place. Kevin doesn't know how to deal with it. Good Lord. So, but, you know, in the books, the dad, for some reason, it feels more like the kids are doing their own thing, even though the dad does clue them in. At least in some of the early books, they kind of, it's more like they're like, we were driving on the road, and then we saw some guy who almost hit us when we were motorcycling, and then we got in a fight with him, and then we followed him, and then it turned out it was part of some sort of, like, smuggling operation. So it's like, you know, they're enterprising, they're finding their own work. Sometimes the dad clues them in and is like, let's go to Mexico to look into this weird shit. But sometimes it's the kids. And the series, it's much more focused on the dad bringing them items to look through. And so it does change the dynamic.
Why do you suppose the esteemed television producer Glenn A. Larson made that choice?
Now, I don't know if this is true, but that's not going to stop me from repeating it to our 5 listeners. My understanding was, and I'm wildly speculating here, to be clear. You know, I heard that the Stratemeyer Syndicate people, when this was made, they, like, the producers almost agreed to keep it very wholesome. You know, like they wanted, like they didn't want it to get all sexed up, you know? And I almost wonder if having the dad be like, such a presence here was almost an attempt to be like, oh, look, they're good, clean-cut kids. They're always doing what their dad tells them. You know, like almost like kind of not be super countercultural. I don't know, just an idea. Maybe not.
Well, at the same time, in the original Nancy Drew books, her father is kind of a hard-hitting, tough attorney. Really, really the man in charge. But in the TV series, he's like vaguely effeminate, weak. He has his office above, like, a hardware store.
Kevin has a fixation on Carson Drew, the character in general, and hates the TV Carson Drew, loves the insane, vaguely sexualized movie Carson Drew from the 30s, and...
Isn't that closer to how you pictured Carson Drew?
To be honest, I didn't picture him in a lot of at all. You just want attorneys to be seen in the best light. As you say,
I want them to be seen in as realistic as light as possible, which I'll grant you is the best light possible. Everybody loves an attorney.
You can't even say that with a straight face. Maybe the problem between you and your wife is your sense of denial about how attorneys are viewed in society. You know what? Tell the audience what you call what you say about attorneys. Your line.
I say we always do our best to find justice for people.
That's not what you say.
That's exactly what I say. I don't know what you're talking about,
you
Mrs.
Say,
Greenlee.
You say lawyers are princes among men. Get a load of that, folks. Oh, my God. So, okay, so... What the fuck were we even talking about? We're getting more turned around than the Hardy Boys in this episode.
We haven't even started to discuss the plot of the episode.
No, that's always a bad sign when we're like we're like 16 minutes in, haven't even touched the plot. So let's dive into this.
I watched the whole thing. I'm not sure I really understand the plot.
Oh,
I remember the scenes, and I was paying attention.
So you know what happened, but you don't know why.
Yeah.
So I think I. Well, it doesn't matter. It's a stupid plot. But basically, at the place called Alphabet or Alpha...
Well, let's start with the opening scene.
Okay, yeah.
Where the Hardy brothers, as there's their
known... The brothers Hardy.
They're sitting in their homes.
In their homes, they're two separate homes. It's a split screen.
They're sitting in their home. Jesus Christ. Sean Cassidy is wearing a very distinctive shirt that's blue with a white stripe down the arms.
You said it reminded you of something, didn't? Or like that was like a shirt that was popular in the 70s?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I thought you were indicating that at one point. No,
I just said it's a distinctive shirt.
I had that shirt. I'm wearing it right now. Okay, I'm sorry. I was confused.
What the hell are you talking about? You don't pay any attention to me at all. That's one of the reasons I had to go to the detective.
So So I stopped confusing your shirts.
He's wearing this very distinctive shirt, and he's playing, is it checkers or is it chess?
They're playing chess, the game of kings.
And Fenton Hardy comes in and says he's working on a case with Cold War implications. There's some scientist. He's gone missing, I believe. And he may be being pursued by the Soviets.
Well, that sounds like a movie I heard of.
Or perhaps being pursued by the Chinese. And Sean Cassidy says, that reminds me of a movie. And the movie, of course, is a well-known Chinese-Russian spy thriller, Casablanca.
And to be clear, he says this with the biggest, dumbest grin you could imagine on anyone's face. and you almost expect Fenton to look downcast and just leave the room. And for Parker Stevenson, he's like, stop trying to impress Dad with your film knowledge. It's just not... It's not working out.
My question is, why even include that? Why make a reference to a film that you obviously haven't seen if you're the script writer?
That reminds me of a funny romantic comedy, A Bridge Over the River Kwai.
why couldn't you say, oh, that sounds like something out of a movie? Why specify a movie that has none of those elements in it?
It's almost like they watched Casablanca, and the dad talked about how it was like the movie that meant the most to him and their dead mother, because their mother is dead in this version, even though she's not in the books, and Joe fell asleep during it, but wanted to convey that he saw it and appreciated it and did it in the worst way possible. But otherwise, I don't know. It was delivered in such a way that drew attention to it. It wasn't like a throwaway, like, oh yeah, Casablanca.
We have
Casablanca. Oh boy, I love that
tight
movie.
Close up of Sean Cassidy.
I love all those aliens in Casablanca.
And so
we'll always have Paris before it got destroyed by the fucking aliens. Before those Chinese and Russian spies came in.
So then he says, boys, we really need to track down this missing scientist. Why don't the two of you? This may have international complications. If the slightest thing goes wrong, it could trigger World War III, resulting in the deaths of millions. So I want to put it in the hands of my little boys.
Aww. Also, you know, I'm going to say the spies out there nowadays from Russia and China, those guys make James Bond look like Snoopy. So I guess, like, permanently fighting the Red Baron and sleeping on
what
top
an,
of his
what
house.
What an odd thing for you to say, Anya.
Well, we're not going to explain it, that's for sure.
It's certainly an odd remark. I'm going to add that to my records to share with the detective.
Now, Kevin Greenlee, you, sir, know for a fact that that is the comparison that Fenton Hardy himself made in this episode that I'm referencing.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
You and your fucking gaslighting. I feel like you could gaslight your relatives by watching this, and then just when they reference the weird details and it'd be like, that didn't happen.
So I want the two of you to follow a man who works, who at least in the past worked at the company where this guy went missing. And this guy who you're be trailing is Officer Hoppy Hopkins from Sanford and Son, who's now become a scientist. So I was understanding all that.
Did Hoppy Hopkins seem like he'd be a good scientist in Sanford and Son?
He seemed on Sanford and Son, which was a much more sophisticated program than this.
Oh, yeah.
He was dumb on Sanford and Son, but a dumb man on Sanford and Son would be a brilliant man on this program.
20 IQ points higher.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've only seen one episode of Sanford and Son with the couch, and I can...
Is that your nickname for me?
You're the
couch? Yeah, I watched it with the couch.
You're a weird man, Kevin. Why do you want to be the couch?
I don't know. You said, well, I watched it with the couch.
The episode with the couch. I don't know what the fuck it's called. I've only seen Sanford and Son once.
What were your impressions?
It was pretty dated and offensive comedy, but it had a certain...
But other than that, it was pretty good.
Well, it had a certain comedic timing that still held up, so I could see why you liked it, even though it was kind of like goof, you know? They really think being gay is quite funny. That certainly did not age well, but some of the dynamic between the dad and the son did.
You loved Red Fox.
Yeah, he was funny. I mean, he was legitimately funny. But again, like, I think your mileage varies on how amusing you find that kind of humor.
So Hoppy Hopkins is in a truck, and the Hardy Boys are expertly following him at a distance of like 2 feet.
Yeah, like tailgating him.
And thinking, oh yeah, we're doing really good. He has no idea we're following him. But somehow Hoppy Hopkins gives them the slip because the Hardy Boys, why don't you explain this particular twist?
He turns off down a dirt road on the side of the road and they follow him. And then a UFO, glowing UFO, fills up the sky in front of him. And they look up and they start freaking out. And then at some point it comes towards them and they actually stop the car. Stop their van, their kind of creepy van, and they both roll out of their respective doors and fall on the ground.
Which sometimes looks cool when people do that.
But not this time. And then they try to take a picture of it, and it doesn't show up on film. Oops. And if you're wondering, wait, did you guys accidentally just, like, turn the channel to, like, the History Channel while you were watching this? Nope. This is the episode, folks. Strap in.
And the special effects, you know, obviously today a person using an iPhone could do something much better than this phony UFO and certainly much better than the special effects we see later in the episode. But, I went to high school in the 80s, and I was a member of our high school's little TV staff.
Oh, you're one of the little nerds.
And our little TV studio in the 80s, which had almost no money, no equipment, I feel we could have done and did do better UFOs and better chroma key or blue screen effects than we saw in this episode. It's really embarrassing.
So we're... Are you going to sue the creators of Stranger Things for ripping off your life story? Strange goings-on in Indiana with an AV club.
TV club, not AV club.
Oh, I'm sorry then. Okay, totally different. So what's the difference between a blue screen and a green screen, or is there no difference?
Basically the same. Just a chroma key effect.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to see more of that, folks. Don't you worry. Yeah, it was pretty bad. But, like, I don't give a shit about that. To me, it's like you could still... To me, the central failing of this show is always the writing. It's always written in the way to be the dumbest thing possible. Yeah, anytime they could kind of... It's like a kind of a little bit of a clever twist or a clever decision or a clever line of dialogue is right within reach. It's a low-hanging apple on the tree of writing, and they're just like, eh! Let's just pick off this, like, shit that already fell on the ground and rotted months ago. I mean, that's what they do. This is the Hardy Boys / Nancy Drew. What do you expect?
To me, the worst thing about the show is always this really dramatic, close race. Is it the writing? Is it the acting? Is it the production values? It's always like a photo finish.
To me, though, the production... If you have good, sharp writing, production values are going to take away from that. But if you have great production values... And the writing sucks. It's like to tell a good story. And they just can't do that. They don't know how. No one ever taught them.
What do you think about the acting?
I mean, I kind of like that. I kind of like the back and forth between Parker Stevenson and Sean Cassidy. They like kind of feel like they kind of like, you know, bug each other the way brothers do. But I mean, generally, no. I mean, and like, and also all the like, all the side people too. Or it's everyone's kind of. It's just not there, you know, in a very 70s way. But again, like, as long, I mean, I don't really, it doesn't need to be Laurence Olivier, you know, like, it to me, the right, they don't really, no one has anything to do. What are you supposed to do with a fucking UFO coming at your van? I mean, that's just stupid. And we know it's not going to be a UFO. We know it's going to be some mystery, some hologram or some bullshit. But, like, it's sort of, nothing that happens is ever a surprise. That's my thinking. So I was like, okay. Like, when I read this summary, when you read the summary to me when we were picking what episode to do, and it was like, UFOs meets the Hardy Boy. I was like, oh my God, it's Ancient Aliens, Hardy Boys crossover, let's go nuts. And then it's never quite as balls to the wall crazy as you want it to be. You know, you want it to be like a slapstick, ridiculous mess. You don't want it to be like.
So you felt this episode was too realistic?
Just, it didn't go far enough. Like, you know, because like they'd be like, the Hardy Boys would come back and be like, I know you think we're crazy, Dad. And he'd be like, no, I believe you. I trust you guys. And like, it would have been funny if everyone was like acting like, you guys need to go to the mental hospital. Like, it doesn't feel like the stakes are that high. Like, worst comes to worst in this, they don't find a missing man. Okay, well, he was already missing. And then
he'll probably just die alone.
He'll probably die alone. And then the other thing is that, you know, maybe Fenton Hardy doesn't get this contract with this, scientific firm.
So his career is wrecked, his reputation is shattered. Yeah, that's good.
One bad thing is definitely going to wreck somebody's career like that. And no, I mean, the stakes don't feel high. Stakes feel very low.
It's Cold War drama. The Russians and the Soviets.
The Russians and the Soviets?
The Russians and the Soviets, yeah. And the Chinese. Just like in Ryan's song.
What? What are you going on about? I think we need to figure out what's wrong with Anya Greenlee's husband. I think that's what the detectives need to figure out.
Oh, that comment I made got under your skin. You keep referencing it.
Oh, I'll be referencing it for some time, Mister. You're gonna see mysterious people following you around wearing trench coats and hats. They're gonna figure out what's going on with you.
So, they lost. They were supposed to follow Hoppy Hopkins from Sanford and Son. They lose him. And so they have to, because of the UFO. And so they have to go and tell their dad, guess what? We lost Officer Hoppy Hopkins because we saw a UFO. How does that go?
Well. How do we even set this up? Fenton Hardy says something very concerning. Should we just play the clip?
Okay.
Then what would you say if I told you that we were run off the road by a disc, a flying disc?
Oh, I'd say that's the best story I heard since the F you got in volleyball was because your shorts were too tight.
They were.
So, what the fuck? I made Kevin film that. Also, the crackling in the background is our fire. It's not... We're stepping on a bubble wrap or something.
Speak for yourself, sister. But he chortles with unfeigned delight at the memory of his son wearing two short volleyball shorts.
Two tight volleyball shorts, even worse. And I want to know why did they put that in there?
So he's saying, son, you thinking you see a flying disc reminds me of that time you said your performance as an athlete suffered because your testicles hurt.
Is that why you never became a big athlete?
isn't that what he's saying?
Yeah, he is, and I just...
either that or he's suggesting he was a bad volleyball player because the shorts went up into his the crack of his behind. Either one.
Yeah, wedgie.
Either one. I don't want to think about.
I don't want to think about it. I don't know what father wants to think about that with their son.
And finds it funny.
It's something to never bring up again.
I don't recall my father ever laughing about, oh, Kevin, remember that time your balls hurt?
And God knows there were many times where that affected Kevin's performance on the volleyball squad.
What did you make of it?
It just seemed like a very bizarre line. And
what would the female version of it be? What if you went to your mother and said, Mom, I saw a flying disc? And she laughed and she said, Anya, that reminds me of the time you...
Let's just not even fill in those blanks. Let's just keep moving. It was just one of those really creepy, awkward lines that you're like, why did they put this in here? And at this point, not the UFO, not the badly drawn fake UFO. This scene with the weird shorts comment is what prompted Kevin to turn to me. Kevin, a man who has never done more than really sample alcohol in his life. Never really had a drink, full drink.
I've had a sip occasionally.
You've had a sip occasionally early in your 20s because people were trying to get you into it and you're like, just fuck this.
Haven't had even a sip for a decade.
Turns to me and says, you know, I'm usually the last person to say this, but I think I really need a drink. And fortunately for everyone, there's no alcohol in our house, so that's fine. But, I mean, and we needed a break. I Kevin got me some tea at this point. We kind of had to, like, stop, reassess what we're doing in life, and then just move on. And I think that's what we're going to have to do right here. Because I can't even joke about this because it just sounds so weird and fucked up. Remember your shorts were too tight? Like, what the fuck? Good God!
So I have a feeling that this is the line you're going to be quoting. I'm going to come in and say, oh, Anya, I got a flat tire in the car. You're going to laugh and say, oh, Kevin, this reminds me of that time your shorts were too tight.
Kevin, there have been very many tight shorts incidents in your life, so.
Especially since I met you and you started doing my clothes shopping. We know what Mama Ani likes.
Oh my God. I just like to objectify you all day.
Which I mentioned to the detective.
Oh, so this detective.
It's all part of the puzzle.
It's all in his files.
That's right.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Oh my God.
So then they do one of those things where we see a shot of the Hardy Brothers van driving on a road. And there is a post-production voiceover added.
They do that a lot on the show. It makes you feel like they would do the episode, shoot them, and realize, oh, fuck, we didn't explain what was happening here. So then they need to, like, add in this.
Some expository dialogue. Yeah. Love to see that.
You know, it's the mark of a quality.
So they go visit the place where the Soviet scientist worked, and they see Hoppy Hopkins.
He's not Soviet. He's an American.
Wasn't he born in the Soviet Union?
Oh, no, you're right. I guess I wasn't.
Thank you.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, one of us pays attention. One of us gives a damn.
I certainly, that person certainly is not me here.
So they have basically a worthless conversation with Hoppy Hopkins.
Who's never in it again, doesn't show up again.
Yeah, but
He got his money. He's out.
I note this because in this scene, Sean Cassidy is wearing a he's wearing a sweater as opposed to his blue shirt. And then in the next scene, he's wearing the blue shirt again. So is it like his favorite shirt he's wearing a lot? Or was it just a sloppy day at the production studio? The continuity person was out sick? Who's to say?
This is the kind of stuff we're talking about to avoid talking about the plot of the episode. Kevin's fumbling around looking for shirts and shit. That's how bad it is. Pretending to talk to detectives about me.
Yeah, I'm pretending. It's all in good fun. Don't go looking at the bank statement.
Kevin, I hope the detective didn't make you pay him up front. Because if he did, I think you're in for a big surprise.
You think I was taken? By a con artist? Playing a confidence game?
I think you're good for it.
He seemed to know what he was doing. He had some pretty on-point comments.
For all I know, you are hallucinating the detective. The detective looked exactly like you and you were talking with him, and he was just you in a little fedora, and then he told you to leave money somewhere, and then you in your fugue state picked it up, and it's just all been some sort of, like, you tailing yourself kind of situation.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's exactly what. You don't need to worry your pretty little head about any of it.
Oh, my pretty little head. Go fuck yourself.
It's all just a joke.
Yeah. I'll get my Anya private detectives on you. Tailing each other. So they go out to this house in the woods.
Well, before they do that, they have the back of the house. He's wearing the shirt again. He has a conversation with his dad. And it's like late at night. And let's all just go to bed. And then a few minutes later, the aunt, who's apparently not the housekeeper, goes and tells Fenton, I heard the boys take off in the van. And he said, oh, yeah, I was wondering when they decide to do that.
Go get high.
So then they go into the woods where they see an old man. And, of course, their first instinct is, let's get him.
Let's chase him.
Let's terrify this oldster. So they chase him, and he kind of, they lose him because they're really bad at their work. Because an enfeebled old man can get away from them easily.
Do you think an enfeebled old man could get away from you easily?
Well, I know an enfeebled old man can't get away from you because I've tried.
I keep dragging you out. You try to escape out the front door like Lanny sometimes.
Yeah, you know if you leave that door open, I'm just heading for the hills.
You're bolting. Oh man, gotta put in an electric fence or something.
But they can't find him, and they say, oh, here's a house. Maybe he's in this house. So here's the thought, why don't we break into this house? Sure, it's illegal, it's unethical, it's probably a bad idea. If there's anyone in the house who's not affiliated with the old man, we'll just terrify them. They'll probably call the police on us, we're getting all sorts of problems, but let's do it. What's the worst thing that could happen if we break into this house in the middle of the woods, Goldilocks style?
You speak like a man whose house was broken into by two teenage sleuths.
Tell us about this damn house.
So they walk in, and it seems like okay furnished. They go upstairs. They go into a room, and things seem a little off. Once Joe is alone, he starts hallucinating that he's shrinking and that the house, that the room is growing bigger, Alice in Wonderland style. So, you know, Sans a white rabbit. And so he starts screaming. And at this point in the episode, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Frank comes running back. You know, it doesn't repeat itself for him. So it's like, okay, maybe Joe's just crazy. Then they step into another room and they're outside in the wilderness. In front of a green screen, really. and a wolf starts chasing them.
A very obvious green screen.
Very obvious green screen. And then they run into another room, and Frank falls through the floor. That's the end.
Hence our title, The Disappearing Floor.
So,
have you read the book, The Disappearing Floor? Is it the same plot?
I probably have, but it's so long ago that I don't remember it.
I think you'd remember this.
Who knows?
There were UFOs and...
It's one thing to read something and it be silly. It's another thing to see a bad green screen rendition of that. And like, wouldn't your first thought be like, oh, first of all, like, oh, something screwy is going on here. Like, you know, like, what did they think? It was magic or something?
And there's always something unhappy making when you see the video quality gets a little bit different around the figures of Joe or Parker Stevenson or Sean Cassidy, if you will. And that's like the telltale sign, oh, there's bad green screen work ahead. So there's no surprise.
No.
Like maybe if you walk into a room and your buddy disappears down the floor, maybe that'd be shocking. But when you walk into the room and suddenly you're obviously on a green screen, you know there's going to be a bad green screen effect ahead.
Yeah, and it's like, it's like, it's stupid. And you know it's going to have something to do with the evil company that they, you know, their dad is working for, blah, blah, blah.
Is it an evil company?
Or, they just, whatever, you know.
Or do they just employ some evil people?
They just employ some evil people, I guess. And basically, from there, Fenton Hardy decides to file a report with Alpha Tech, the company he's working for, where he's supposed to find the scientist. And he basically cites his son, saying, like, yeah, they saw a UFO, then they went into this place and Joe shrunk down to a little tiny man in the room, and then a wolf chased them, and then they fell through a floor. It just sounds like something a kindergartner would make up, you know? And he's understandably fired by the board of directors.
So his son's have wrecked his career.
Son's wrecked his career, and that's the end.
Yeah, I wish.
No. At some point, you know, in their investigation, Frank connects with a young lady who's riding around the company headquarters in like an indoor car.
Like a golf cart.
A golf cart. And she reveals that she like kind of hints that she's related to some of the people involved here, like the old man who's missing. And also the one of the woman lady directors who has been talking with Fenton a lot and saying, I don't believe you and I'm not going to tell you what Project K is because it's proprietary.
So on a side note, this young lady, when we saw her on screen, you said, oh, she looks familiar.
She did.
So we looked her up on IMDb. She actually only had 2 credits, and this was her 2nd credit. And can you imagine, like, dreaming all your life, I want to be an actress. I want to make it big. I want to make people happy through my art. You go to Hollywood, you wait tables, you wait for your big break, and finally you get cast on a network television show in an important role, and it's the Hardy Boys. And then you never work again. Well, that poor woman.
We wish her the best. Hope she had a happy life wherever she is. Jeez.
Can you imagine how devastating that would be?
You speak like a man who's had this happen to you.
That poor young thing.
What would you be your side character on the Hardy Boys? Hey, Kevin, we love your stuff. We love your attitude that you bring to everything. You can write your own role here. Write your own meal ticket. What do you want to do? Who are you?
Let me think of what would your character
be? No, I don't have anybody for me. I'm asking you.
Who would you be on Nancy Drew?
It'd kind of be fun to be the bad guy.
So you'd like to give it to old Nancy.
What?
Or do you like Nancy to expose you at the end?
No, I don't know. Being the bad guy in general can be kind of fun. But if I was going to be a good guy, I would be, to preserve my image, I guess I would be... There's always like a kind of a, I mean, I'm not that old, but like There was a confused old woman in Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew often does a lot of services for the elderly where they're, like, gonna get kicked out of their house or someone's trying to make them sound crazy and, you know, shit like that's always happening. So I feel like I'd be good at that because I, you know me, like, I can't keep any of my shit straight. Like, I'll be like, oh, I put this paper down here and now it's gone. You know, you could really do a number on me if you were trying to, like, get my house because it's on an oil reserve or something. So I would be born to play that role.
See, I think you would be Nancy is like vacationing in some town and some mystery has come up involving people in the local community. She can't make heads or tails of it because she doesn't understand who all the players are. And she decides, you know, maybe what I should do is go speak to the editor of the small town paper.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That'd be you.
And I'd just be in there for an expedition dump scene that no one would pay attention to.
Now, who would I be in the Hardy Boys?
No. You need to pick. You're writing your own check in Hollywood. They come to you. You need to pick.
Let me ask you this. How old am I? Am I my current age? Because that would really limit my options. I'm 50. A 50-year-old man can't just be palling around with Joe and Frank without raising some eyebrows. So I think my time in the Hardy Boys universe has come to an end. I think I've missed my chance.
I don't. Let's. Now you just made the whole thing fucking weird.
I'm taking your question seriously.
You could be their dad's friend, I guess.
So I'm their dad's friend, and I come to them to discuss a problem I'm having with my wife.
Fuck you! Go fuck yourself. No, write your little character.
I just did. I'm their dad's friend. I can't be hanging out.
You're not hanging. You don't have to hang out with. I'm an editor. I don't. She comes to me, and I just give her. I give her the scoop. You know. I don't. You could be someone like that. You don't have to like go and be like, let's go hang out at the roller derby. I mean, what the fuck? You're really overthinking this.
I'm their dad's friends. I guess I used to work with Fenton on the force.
On the force. Oh my god, Officer Greenlee. Yeah.
No, that's my idea.
And then you don't. What do you do? Who are you in the episode? Are you the secret bad guy?
I don't want to be exposed by the Hardy Boys. I'm 50 years old.
You're making it sound very weird. You're making it sound very questionable.
Maybe Fenton's old partner on the force. I've recently retired, been going through my files. There's this case that's always haunted me. And I want the Hardy Boys to help me solve it.
Aww.
Now, I told you, I gave you my version of a character for you and Nancy. Now you give me your version of a character for me and the Hardy Boys.
I would say you would be, they go into a new town and you're the prosecutor there. And you're not too happy with them fucking around. But then you have to give them credit at the end where they do solve it.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say they go into a town out west. And I'm the prospector. Grizzled old miner. Digging for gold.
Miner 49er.
That's right.
Get off my land, you claim jumpers.
I could do that.
Back when you had a Unabomber beard, you could have really won that part. No questions asked. You were born to play that role.
Yeah, I could do that. I can grow the beard again.
Maybe we can get you one of those master class passes about acting or something.
I don't want to be an actor.
All right.
I don't want to be an actor.
Okay. So I guess that's, we don't have to worry about this.
I don't have the theater in my blood the way you do.
Also, the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew mysteries have been off for decades, so.
Wasn't there a recent revival on like Hulu or something of the Hardy Boys?
Oh, was there?
Wasn't there?
Yeah, that sounds familiar. And I know CBW is a Nancy thing, but...
So there's still hope?
No, there isn't, because this is a very specific show.
Your editor character could fit in anywhere, anytime.
I don't want it to.
You definitely have that Perry White vibe.
What, I'm going to start yelling at people?
You just did a great example, bragging about how good you are at yelling at people.
Being unreasonable.
Hey, he said, Kevin, I'm much better at yelling than you. And then I suggest the Perry White vibe, you get all offended.
Now I know what you went to the detective about. You're like, my wife keeps on saying, don't call me chief, and Great Caesar's ghost, and yelling at people who aren't there. I think she's becoming Perry White. TV's Perry White.
John Hamilton. Who we didn't realize he was in The Maltese Falcon, another movie we saw recently. I don't think we've discussed it yet.
We haven't discussed it yet, but that'll be an upcoming episode.
Oh, I just dropped a spoiler, as the kids say.
Yeah, as the kids say, exactly.
Oh, I better bounce.
Oh my god. You're slaying. So, should we just wrap this up?
Well, there's so much plot left to cover.
Not really.
Oh, we were riding the golf cart with that lady.
Yeah, and then security gets both of the Hardy Boys, and then they make them wait at the front desk for their dad to pick them up and take responsibility for them like they're fucking five. Embarrassing.
That's really humiliating.
Humiliating. That's the kind of shit that lands you in therapy right there. Happening right before our eyes. And then, you know, and then we got to Fenton Hardy gets fired because he's asking too many questions about what the project is that they're concerned about and what, you know, what project was this missing guy working on.
So then there was something I feel like I may have missed something because, like, right after this, everybody is looking at a cube that has a crude image of a ballerina in it.
Yes. I don't know what that was either. It just kind of appears.
And then say, oh, this is a hologram. Hey, wait a minute. Holograms. Why, I bet.
No, but it couldn't. But of course. Yeah, they're holograms. That they were seeing in the house was holograms. Very sophisticated holograms. So sophisticated that they'll make millions of dollars because it'll help the army scare people with fake soldiers or something. And
I didn't understand that.
Yeah. And
and there was a scene you found disturbing.
Yeah. Fenton's looking at the ballerina holograms like really excitedly, and I was just like, this is shades of Chewbacca's dad in the Star Wars Christmas special looking at the little singers and like having a weird
He's looking at this ballerina with like naked, raw longing.
Desire.
Raw desire. Intense desire. And then shortly thereafter, we see him asleep with his feet up and a big smile on his face.
Yeah, the implications are disturbing, folks. The implications are disturbing indeed.
How desperate must he be to be so excited by this crude hologram
of a ballerina dancing around men?
What does that mean?
Sexualize everything.
I've never sexualized a hologram, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, you had to add in that lawyerly addendum to say you're off the hook if I find something.
For all I know, with this shockingly good hologram technology, you could be a hologram right now.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Exactly.
Is that why you went to the detective? You want to see if I'm a hologram?
That's really haunted you, that remark about me going to the detective.
Well, I just love the image.
Yeah. Me skulking into the detective's office. You got to help me figure out this mystery about my wife.
See, if I had hologram technology, right, I could kind of trick you a bunch of times and then go off and do my own thing.
Which is why I need to hire
go
a detective.
Go off and take care of my own concerns.
Ooh.
Keep you entertained here, having a whole full-blown conversation with someone who's not really present.
I'm used to that. So what would you be sneaking out and doing?
Never you mind. You'll have to hire another detective for that. See, maybe that's why sometimes people are detectives with their brothers, because, you know, new problems keep cropping up and you need different people to handle different, you know, legs of the table almost.
Yeah, I can see you like tricking me with a hologram to keep me in like the office.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just in the front room reading a Nancy Drew book.
Exactly. Going out, doing some shopping, relaxing.
Buying hats.
Taking a nap. Exactly. Buying some hats. I think these hologram folks are onto something. Keep your husbands entertained all day.
Oh, it takes more than a hologram to entertain the likes of me.
Oh, yeah, you're all man. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know. If you don't know you're talking to a hologram, then that could be all you need. Next thing, then I'll come back, and you won't be paying attention to my hologram. You'll be looking at a weird little ballerina hologram with lust on your face. It'll blow up in my face.
See, what would probably happen is you trick me with a hologram, but the Kevin you trick is itself a hologram.
Oh my god,
we're both going to, I got a hologram, so I sneak out and get custard, and I run into you there.
It's like the Pina Colada song, but with holograms. Jesus. And then it turns out Lanny was just a hologram the whole time. We don't know what original dog was there, but at this point, she's long flown the coop. So they end up going back to the haunted hologram house, and a hullabaloo ensues where they are going through all the different rooms.
Who's Chef Bogard?
What?
He said they talked to a girl who was a fella with Chef Bogard in the background.
I don't even fucking know. I obviously meant to write something else, but it must
there was a scene where they talked to this woman who was driving the golf cart, and they're at a pizzeria, and there's a guy making a pizza behind him. And apparently, he was Chef Bogard. I didn't know his backstory.
I intended to write Chef Boyardee, because this guy's wearing the biggest chef's hat you've ever seen in a fucking film. It's huge. And you were pointing that out, too. So obviously, like, I spelled it wrong.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Writing it quickly. But that was supposed to be Chef Boyardee. Oh, good old Chef Bogard. Locally known master of the kitchen. But yeah, they break into this house with a secret tunnel, and they see that the missing scientist is being kept there under threats and trickery or something.
And it's all holograms, and that's pretty much the end of it.
Yeah, they have a extended scene with two police talking to the hologram of the villainous woman who was behind it all, who was an executive for the company who just wanted to get the money, and it doesn't go anywhere, and it just drags on and on, and then the episode mercifully finally ends.
And as we said, it ends with Sean Cassidy taking this man's granddaughter down to the basement to have sex with her. With her granddad just sitting up there. I bet Fenton's going to say, hey, you want to see a hologram? You're going to show him his little cube.
You people are sex maniacs. What are your thoughts on this episode as it compares to other episodes in this series that we've watched?
It's a bad show. Yeah. And it was a bad episode of a bad show.
What's the best episode of this show that we've seen? I don't mean good. I just mean good for this show.
I think we talked about the episode, The Lady at Five, a Tuesday. Is that the one where with veteran character actor Joseph Cotton?
Yeah. Yes. No. Joseph Cotton is in the one.
What's the name of that one?
Arson and Old Lace.
Yeah, that was a pretty good episode.
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't dull. It made sense. I understood the motivations of the characters. The characters behaved rationally. No one was masturbating to cubes of ballerinas. What do you think was a good episode of this program?
I don't know. I think I like some of the Nancy Drew ones. Those felt a little more grounded. They always do a lot of spy shit with the Hardy Boys. I thought the ones...
It's How to Be Grounded. We don't have a floor.
Oh my god, that's a good one. I'd say that if you are going into the disappearing floor expecting a good mystery, this show will leave you floored.
Thanks for listening this week. I'd like to give a special thanks to Kevin T. Greenlee, who's no relation to me. He's the guy that composed the great music for this podcast, and you can find him on the web at kevintg.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at MysteryToMe. That's mystery_2_me_. And at MysteryToMe Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can always send us recommendations and feedback of any kind at MysteryToMePodcast@gmail.com.
We're not teens setting up Hotmail accounts in the early 2000s, so all of those spell out 2 as T-O.